everybody. Welcome to our daily blogs here, because we are live from Indianapolis at Gen Con 2020. No, it's not true. We would be there normally. This would have been day one of Gen Con, so instead we're celebrating Gen Can't, and we are doing our own little con where we're just getting away to play some games. So with me is...
Larry Plano.
Awesome. And I'm the Brant. I didn't say that, but I imagine most people listening to this have listened to the Portal Gaming Podcast. So welcome. So we're going to kind of do three of these as we kind of are spending 3 days just playing games. Brian will join us too today. He was running the store, so he wasn't able to join us. So yeah, we're just going to run through the games that we played here. It was kind of a lighter day, huh, Larry?
I don't think we played one game that I would say was past light medium.
Yeah, it was just kind of that.
Which is okay. I mean, we got some quick plays just to kind of get into the mode. I think in my mind I was waiting for Brian tomorrow before we whip out some of the medium to medium heavy games, you know, so.
Yeah, I'd like to get like a bunch of them set up on tables. Like I feel like having them set up.
Oh, yeah.
You know, then we could just jump from one to the other would be good. So maybe we'll kind of do that. All right, anyway. So let's jump into some of our plays. A lot of these are first plays, so we're just kind of giving you first impressions on these, as we would if we were driving home from Gen Con. So first up, we got to play Marvel Villainous Infinite Power. So this is the Marvel version of Disney Villainous from Ravensburger and Prospero Hall. Some changes from the Disney version, I suppose. There's a common fate deck. You have some, like, cardboard cards.
Like specialties.
Yeah, and I guess that's really it. Other than that, it felt pretty similar. There's some other, ideas and things. Yeah, there were specialty cards in the deck.
I might be off on this because I have not played all of the Disney expansions, but this game felt so much more specific to the villain. And I know Disney had specific villains, but in the original game and the first expansion I played, I felt like it was still event cards, ally cards, play fake cards on your opponent to disrupt them, do your thing. In this, I felt like the decks were so much more streamlined towards what that villain was doing. Like, the two villains I played, everything I drew in my deck seemed to mean something for my win condition. My win condition was never find a singular card, like the Aladdin, like find Aladdin's lamp, get Aladdin out, and go back to, right, whatever those were. These were much more, you know, dynamic, and, you know, I think both of us were kind of chugging in one of the games where it was like who just was going to get there first, and then one game I felt like one character was much easier than the other, but
I felt it was very similar to Disney Villainous, which I guess I've played more.
Yeah, it could be.
In terms of all that, I mean, I kind of know what you're saying. They did a couple, like Jafar and Ursula and Captain Hook early on were like, get the main character out from there.
Defeat them.
Yeah.
And the place was locked. But in this, I didn't feel that. It was different. Like, two of the characters, you played Hela, and I played both Ultron and Taskmaster. All three of those characters had something to do with your own allies, as far as win conditions go, to some extent.
Right.
Ultron had to get, you know, his ultimate card out, Ultron Supremacy. But to do that, he had to have certain allies out, discard them, flip over this card, flip over this card. So his was somewhat ally-driven. And Taskmaster was literally have four allies, different locations, strength five or more, right? Which, again, wasn't, you know, find a single card, right? It was just very... Killmonger, though, for you, seemed a little complicated.
No, he wasn't complicated. He just required certain things at the right time, and you just played a fate card that shut down every turn I could possibly do. Like, oh, I'm going to go that location. Oh, you put a card there to cover those tokens, so I can't do that. Oh, I'm going to go trigger this ability. Oh, you make me pay two more power tokens. I don't have them, and I'm on the space that gives me power tokens, so I have to go somewhere else and then come back. So you just kept delaying me a turn over and over again. He was nice because, like, Claw was on the board. It was like, defeat Claw was the first step. The problem was I had to draw an ally to be able to vanquish with. And then once I drew the ally, you got rid of my item that I needed. So it was just that kind of thing. I mean, it seems similar. It feels like take your pick in terms of theme. I like both themes, so I'm down to have both. The one thing I do notice with Marvel is that not really reading the comics, like I'm pretty familiar with a lot of the things in some of the comics, but I don't read through them, is you notice like how it's not the MCU. So many of the games don't go off of the MCU. They go off of the comics.
That, right? We always have
that. So, like, there are characters who are allies of Killmonger that are not in the Black Panther movie at all. So you don't know what you're playing. So that's an interesting part of playing Marvel villainous is, are you familiar with these villains? And then, on top of that, are you familiar with these villains' like goals and allies and how they're fleshed up in the comic book world, whereas the Disney characters are straight from the movies?
Well, and I think what makes this work better for me, and I like both themes. I mean, I got engaged in Disney World and had my honeymoon in Disney World, so I have nothing against Disney, though Marvel technically is Disney now anyways.
Right, but, yeah, it's all the same.
The common fate pile in a two-player game doesn't really matter, but in a multiple-player game, because in the old game,
you can pick who
in the old game, it was, oh, Brant looks like he's doing well, let me choose his fake deck. Now it's, let me draw a fake card and see what it is and decide, oh, Brant doesn't have a card that this affects, but Brian does, I'll play it on Brian. So I think in multiplayer, you know, beyond two, three and four players, even five, I feel like that joint fake deck is going to make the game a little more dynamic and less pick on a person like, ah, I think he's doing well, let me draw from his fate. You know, whereas in Disney, that was hard to do because it would be weird for Aladdin to show up in The Lion King.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But in the Marvel Universe, comic or otherwise, it's not unusual for Iron Man or Captain America to show up in any of the villains. Yeah. And even some of the Ultron-specific cards, it wasn't that far-fetched for it to show up against Hela or whoever. So I think that component of it works well for Marvel, where it wouldn't have, I think, worked well for Disney. And I think it just adds a lot to the game. I like that piece of it.
Yeah. It's not compatible with Disney because of those changes. I'm sure somebody on BGG will make something that makes them compatible. I don't think it matters to me. I mean, even when I played Villainous, I was happy to open up the three-pack and be like, which of these three characters do you want to be? And I'll be one of the other two. Like, I don't care about, like, claiming a character. And, oh, I'm always going to be Cruella De Vil, and now you got to open up whatever box you want. So I'm not worried about, like, I really wanted, you know, Ursula to take on Thanos. That was, like, my dream matchup. It doesn't matter to me. But I could see people wanting that, or just that interest of, like, ooh, I could play a Marvel villain while my kid plays their favorite Disney villain. Right. So that could be a thing for people. But all in all, it's just such a fun game. Like, it's kind of my guilty pleasure, the villainous games, because they're not complex. But there's enough you're reading through. That is the one tricky part that I always tell, like, families is, like, there's a lot of reading that first time through. And if you, like, let's say you were a parent and had two kids, and you're like, great, the other parent's out, I'm going to, like, sit down and play this game. I'm like, there's no way you're reading through three people's cards.
Well, what's interesting, too, is the game, once you know how to play the game, like, we knew how to play based on Disney, but then it's, we're reading to go, okay, I'm playing Ultron, how does he win? Okay, what do I need to do? It says complete this. I go backwards and look to complete this. I got to do this. Okay, so now I understand what I'm doing. Whereas in some other games, you don't have that kind of component. So that's kind of cool. Like, every character is so different. And then knowing how you're going to win, or more importantly, how your opponent's going to win, really can help. Like, oh, wait, Brant needs to do X. Okay, I'm playing this card on him. I'll target that card instead. Right. Like, it just... Yeah. It's very specific. But again, it plays fine at two, but I really feel like in this Marvel game, I'm going to want to see it at three and four more than I cared to see Disney at three or four.
Yeah.
So
I could see us sneaking in a game of this tomorrow.
Yeah, with Brian.
Like, this could be something that we
sneak
in.
Well, listen, there's five. I mean, this is typical of you and I. There's five villains in the game. Thanos is probably the most well-known villain.
And we didn't play him.
And we didn't play him, almost purposely. And then again, they hinted to Loki by the silhouette, which... Loki's probably the more popular MCU villain, but I loved it. I mean, I would play that. I would play Disney, too, but this just appeals to me just a little bit more.
Yeah. Next up, we played Side Effects. It's kind of a strange game. It definitely has a theme that could be off-putting to people, I guess. You're, like, struggling through disorders. It's tongue-in-cheek humor, for sure, with, like, skeleton art, but you're...
Depression.
Yeah, you're struggling with, like... Yeah, like
some
madness.
Of them I don't
want
to say.
Right, yeah, right, some that I'm just cool with not saying on here that they're not that big a deal.
Anxiety,
but
gambling, whatever.
Yeah, all these kind of things. And you're basically drawing from a deck of cards and you're trying to get medication that will overcome those. The neat part, the side effect part is, oh, if I get rid of my madness, now I might be open to depression.
Right.
And so somebody could play that card on me. You're trying to cure all your ailments and add other ailments to other players.
But you can only add if they have an aversion to it based on pills they've taken to cure to have cured other. I mean, it falls in the realm of, like, you know, trying to think of games. What was that? There's a Devil's Number game. Where it's like the Devil's Brother or something. You're trying to get sick, and then the rules keep changing.
Right.
And you're just drawing cards and going.
I mean, it's like a flux, I guess.
Yeah, to
but
some
it's not
extent.
Even as
it's not even as deep
thoughtful
as that.
As that.
Right.
Yeah.
There's no changing going on.
I think the theme is just not something I'd be comfortable playing with most people. Like, it just, it would, you know, it's funny. Like, you're trying to laugh at it, but I guess this day and age, laughing at mental health is a tough thing to do.
Right. I mean, for me, the art was pretty neat. It wasn't inappropriate art.
No.
It was interesting, to your point, tongue-in-cheek. It kind of, you know, kind of got me to, you know, like, ooh. It kind of got me to go, oh, gambling problem. What do I take for that? I didn't know there was a pill for gambling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? But whatever. I mean, it was okay. I mean, I it's not a game I would play.
I had a lot of wasted turns. It was like, draw two cards. You can't play any, discard two cards.
I feel like the game's missing, regardless of theme, the game's missing one or two components. Like, if you can't do it, you know.
Right.
Choose to discard two cards to do something else, yeah, or whatever, you know. But
draw another card, whatever.
It was a filler. Took 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was nothing. So then another filler we played was Stampede, which was a game that's been in the store for a little while. It wasn't until I saw a stream with Z Garcia from Dice Tower and Zev, who was Z-Man Games, but now is at WizKids. And I was like, oh, that game looks pretty interesting. So you're collecting stamps with animals on them. And basically, there are 9 animals in the deck, 10 copies of each. And you need to have all 9 animals in front of you, one or more, or 5 of one kind. The game couldn't be simpler. You have a 3-card hand, you draw a card, you play one of the cards, and you do what the card says. And I think the iconography was almost perfect. Each card takes one understanding, like, oh, what is this exactly saying? You had to kind of look close, because they were good with details. But it reminded me of, like, Guildhall, where it's like, oh, I swap cards with you, or I swap cards with the center. Or
I love that game. I'd never get to
swap
play
cards
that
with
enough.
My hand, yeah. You know, blah blah blah. And it was a little lighter than that. There was a little bit of frustration of like, I'm going to do this, and then you're going to undo it, but it couldn't keep persisting that way. Right. And
because there's
you're
only so
all,
many copies.
Yeah, you're always adding to your tableau, so eventually somebody just wins in like 15 minutes.
Right.
It's
going to
have a little bit of that munchkin feel.
It's the perfect filler game. I'm curious with a few more plays. There are definitely opportunities to be clever if it works. Like, you were trying to be clever with one of the animals that swapped all 3 cards in the pool. So you were trying to get to 6.
Right, and then
play that card. Right,
there.
So that's, you know, I was trying something completely different, and then I accidentally won.
Yeah.
I wonder how often the game is just going to end with that all 3 players can win on their turn and it's just waiting to draw that card, which it doesn't really detract from the game for me. It just kind of changes the replayability for me. I don't know that I could play it 10 times, maybe 4 or 5 times. And if there was some cleverness, great, and I can keep playing it. But my guess is with that game, more often than not, you're going to get to that point of multiple people are ready to win, and it comes down to who drew what card or who, you know, it doesn't play like Fabled Fruit, but it almost gives me that feeling of that kind of, there's a victory condition, get your 3 juices, right? And who might have gotten one better draw or one thing that didn't happen to them or something.
Or who can top deck the card they're looking for.
Right, yeah. Which, I mean, I happen to do.
Right.
Right, like, but...
Which, admittedly, if that's kind of what it ends up being, you're not going to play it at a game night with adults.
Right.
You're going to play it with family. You know, bring it to grandma's house and play
perfect
it.
Perfect family
fun.
Way for kids.
But, I mean, it's a cheap game. It's a little thing. It's really nice. Like, the art is like papercraft.
You know, I love the art.
Which I think was really cool. Yeah, was it like papercraft, or have I been playing too much Paper Mario? Was it like folded paper, or was it more like
a
stamp?
Not quite origami, not quite papercraft.
Yeah,
something
between that.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was a fun little game. Next up, we played Last Defense. It's a co-op game from Funko Games and designed by Prospero Hall, which they're kind of tied together now. It's app-driven. Did I say that?
No, but now you did.
So, you know, this is kind of what Prospero Hall does. To me, they look out at the greater, you know, hobby board games. And they say, what is trending? What is interesting? What's happening? How can we harness one aspect and turn it into like a family weight game? So that's what Villainous does with the side mechanism and other game. And this one, they're harnessing that whole idea of apps in games. We played it on beginner mode, which was, in my mind, a mistake because it was too simple. But you got a 20-minute timer, and the app is just going to talk at you. And you're basically trying to uncover scientists from rubble. You are just citizens of the town. And then you're trying to get the scientists like back to the center.
Right, but with
to
that,
get rid of enemies.
But what I will say that they did well in this game is usually the app, you just start it, play it, do whatever. The app told you what was going on, which I appreciated. So we were like, last defense, what does this mean? And literally the first sentences of the app were, all the first responders are out dealing with all of this crisis, and you are the last hope, construction worker, nurse, dad doing a barbecue, et cetera, et cetera. Please go try to rescue scientists and other people under rubble and stop this alien invasion in this area. And that, to me, the app wasn't just a timer. It gave you the story. It gave you the sound when things were changing. And the app was kind of, I felt like I was, you know, immersed in the experience. The wait is beyond easy.
Yeah.
I mean, now granted, we did play on simple mode, but I don't even know what hard mode is going to be, because the reality is, unless the time is less, the monsters really didn't affect us. It was a matter of roll the dice, get the equipment you need. It's not like the monsters had negative effects or did something to you. So I don't know what advanced mode's really going to do to make it that much harder.
They could put monsters out quicker.
We messed up a few times and made it harder on ourselves, and we still won with 10 minutes left on the app, 8 minutes.
It was a little less, but yeah, somewhere in there.
Yeah, I mean, so I just don't know that hard mode is going to be. It's great for kids, great family. It's just not a game for gamers, I don't think.
Yeah, I'm down for one more play to try experience, just to play it again. Plus, it's 20 minutes, and like you said, the game tells you everything to do, the app, so you just do it. Right? So it's not even like setup as a bear or anything. But I'm guessing even after experience, we're going to be like, okay, we won with 6 minutes instead of 8 minutes. Like, that's my guess. So it would be nice if it like came out eventually with like extreme mode. You know what I mean? But it's just, it's not trying to be that. It's a $20 game. So
right. Well, exactly. The
it's
price
that family
point
weight,
is,
get the app going. Get kids
and it's a
involved.
Game that the kids can play on their own to some extent, depending on the age, where they don't need an adult running it. So.
Then we played what I expected to be a very light, quick game. It was like the biggest game we played all night. And this is After the Virus, which I actually just reviewed on the last episode. Because I've been playing solo a whole bunch. And I really liked this game. Somehow, we lost something.
The decks
were
a little screwed up.
Our decks were slightly, which is weird, because I had those organized and something got them disorganized. But anyway, I described it on the last one, but you're basically, it's like a deck builder where you're fighting off zombies. And I didn't want to have you guys play like the intro, where it's just like, get cards in play and now you understand. It almost teaches you the game. So I'm like, oh, let's do this one. Well, it ended up being like, search through your deck, and everybody has to search through the deck. And I, goodness gracious, I searched like 20 cards before I found the card I needed.
If not more.
But we managed to stay alive. I think we bent some rules in terms of how many weapons you could have out.
Yeah, I think Mike might have had a couple extra.
But I love that game. Like, it's not amazing. It's not like a run out and grab it, but like, that's a fun little deck builder. And the artwork, I don't like at all. You said you actually kind of liked it.
I did. I mean, not the zombies. The zombies were very basic, but I actually liked the look of the items and the other stuff. I guess for me, I enjoyed it. I think it looks like it plays well solo. I can kind of extrapolate what solo looks like
solo's
on it.
Better.
You know, reminds me of almost Friday.
Yes.
But what for me, what I loved was the pure co-op, where I could kill the zombies in front of you, I could chase them away with a car, or I could do whatever. And really, we got to the end of the game where Mike and I had what we needed, and we just were like, keep Brant alive, keep ourselves alive, Brant, find your freaking card, it's taking forever.
Yeah.
My only downside is, I'm not sure if they're missing something with the ratio of zombies and the way that works, because they have a track that leads to like 20 plus for the phases, and they only have, I want to say,
zombies.
Yeah, I was going to say 12, but 14 zombies actually
that you can get.
Yeah.
And there does get to a point where you get a strategy of going, ooh, I'm going to be going through my deck shortly. I don't need to kill these zombies. I could just discard them because they're going to come back anyway. So, you know, that was the only thing I was a little unsure of, but I liked it. Yeah. I mean, I definitely did enjoy it.
No, it was cool. So, yeah, I just...
Yeah, and it's a co-op. Co-ops are always...
Yeah, it was fun.
Hard co-ops that you have a chance at winning and a chance at losing, and every game feels like it could go either way. It's fun. Because, I mean, honestly, you only have 3 life. You could easily get stuck early game with a few zombies on you and no way to deal with them, and you go, uh-oh. I mean, I would assume that would happen more in solo than multiplayer, though you get less zombies, I assume, in solo.
Yeah. So then we played 2 more. We played Fallout Shelter, the board game, which is a fantasy flight game. And it's... I had heard it was a really light worker placement, and reading over the rules, I was like, this is going to be like 25 minutes. But it took us a solid hour to play it, and it definitely had choices. It would... I guess my negatives... I'm not going to go into the whole thing, I guess, but it's based on the Fallout video game.
Which I don't know anything
about. And you're it's a worker placement. So you're placing workers in this shelter, and you're getting other workers, and you're getting resources to build rooms, and you're trying to collect happy faces, and threats are coming in, and you can roll dice to remove them. I mean, it's very basic on that front. The part that seemed a little weird is it felt like the arc of the game was going to be the same every time. It was like, get your workers, now you've got your workers, so all the rooms that give you workers are irrelevant. And now just go figure out how to build and get your victory points.
Right. And I think,
and you're just playing like, can I be faster?
Think it's a little balancing act of where you're getting your victory points from, because everyone's going to build to some extent. Like, you chose to build a little less than Mike and I, but you destroyed more
enemies,
so that kind of kept you at pace,
right,
with us. And I think there was a few spaces I went to that gave happiness that just required you to spend resources. So yeah, it's kind of interesting to me. There's not a lot of choice. Now, admittedly, there's a deck of items, right, that I want to say about 35 cards in that deck, give or take. And there's 8 victory point cards in there.
We saw none.
None of them came out when we went through half the deck, maybe a little less, a third of the deck. So once we saw those, we're like, wait a minute, that might have changed this game completely, because,
getting
1 victory point for every 2 water in the end of the game when you had nothing to do, or Mike had nothing to do with his last worker, go get a couple of water, that's a victory point, mm-hmm, right? So that definitely, I almost wonder if the game would benefit from, a hidden objective, right? A hidden,
something you want to
get
do,
bonus point,
be
right?
The first to
it
build,
just it feels ripe for that. It just feels ripe for that, to just have a hidden objective at the beginning of the game, or a couple that you choose from for that extra points. Because otherwise, to your point, Mike and you had the victory points counted out before we finished the last turn.
Yeah.
For the most part, you're like, oh, I got negative here, and then I'm at 19. Oh, Larry's at 21. Right? Like, it was. I don't know that it's a negative, but it's kind of an anticlimactic ending, But the game was fine. I mean, it's a worker placement game, but it's not, I want to say this the right way, it's not what I would consider a traditional Euro-style worker placement game, even though technically victory points, worker placement, Euro, something was just a little different about it. I liked it, but,
And the last one was Exchange, which just came in the mail from Bicycle Games. They sent us a couple games to play. Like bicycle playing cards. They've started making games, and Will Wheaton is like their guy. So Will Wheaton sent me games. And so we played this game Exchange, and it is basically like as pure stock market as you can get. You got 3 items. Everybody starts different. I'm invested in banks, I'm invested in insurance, and I'm invested in bonds. And I have a certain number of them, and I'm going to cash them out at the end of the game based on a market that goes from $10 to, or $20 to $80.
10 to 90 if
it's got
more
players. And I basically just decide, what do I want? Do I want to buy or sell? What do I want to buy or sell? And then how do I want the market to get affected? Everybody does the same. And then you flip over a card that tells you, and the market is volatile, so it also does this. And then you buy or sell at the price. If it gets past 80, it loops back around to 20. And if it drops below 20, it loops back up to 80. I got stung by that a couple times, and that was kind of crazy, but we missed a major rule of paying $50 to view the market card, which is a big deal. And, it was fun for what it was, and it's a really easy, again, one I could see us playing tomorrow because...
I like the mechanic of the 3 envelopes and basically they happen simultaneously, even though it's phase one, phase two, phase three. So to your point, you choose the commodity, you choose if you're buying or selling and how much you're buying or selling of that commodity, and then you're choosing if the commodity is going up or down. I'm surprised there wasn't a neutral.
Yeah.
Which it was interesting that you had to go up or down, you couldn't be neutral, which I guess is okay. But a lot of the game is really looking at your opponent's board. You know, Brandt can't sell anything but bonds. You know, housing is, banks are low. He might try to keep banks low and buy them. I have a lot of banks I don't want to sell, right? So there was a lot of that. And then with three players, it was, I think, easier to predict what was going to happen, though the market card could change it. I feel like five, six players, it might become more difficult to predict, and it might be more, you might try to sell in the middle more.
Right.
Than trying to sell at the top. But it was interesting. I wonder, it was five rounds of the market cards, but the market deck was so large. I wonder if there was a rule missed for setting up to say, take three market stable cards, because a market stable card did come out, and take three random of these other cards, shuffle them. I wonder, or I wonder if it's supposed to be a 25-card deck and you don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. That, to me, I could see going, oh, it's five rounds, put five cards instead of 25 cards and have some sense of what could happen.
The only part to me was, like, it's not really, like, heavyweight market, which is not what you're going for. Like, stockpile, to me, is that great. But it's not, like, I would think bicycle would really be family, like kids. I don't know that kids would play this game or get interest in this game. I mean, there's some good math to do there. Which
this is
be,
like an
you
intro.
You could say, like, hey, we're practicing multiplication in 4th, 5th, 6th grade, and we're going to play this game.
Yeah, no, I feel like but it's more an it's intro just, to economy-based games for very, I don't want to say basic gamers or new gamers that are just getting into it, but it's definitely an intro-level economy game. And it's not, I mean, I hate to even call it economy.
Right.
There's only three things.
Yeah, market.
I mean, yeah, so.
I mean, I could see doing, which we obviously can't do right now, but I could see doing, like, you know, a Sunday night, it's my Sunday night group, and it's like, maybe we're having a couple drinks, and it's people that are just kind of around, like, oh, you want to throw down this game? It takes, like, 25 minutes. And people are laughing, and they're getting upset. But if you have people in the right spot where, like, they don't actually care if they win or lose, they're just kind of trying to laugh like a scattergore. Like, I think you could do that with this game. You could just feel this point like, oh, I totally messed up the market and I had to pay too much. But so did you. I took you down with me. I could see that being something where it kind of keeps it rowdy, right, after playing something like but a Time's Up or whatever.
Right, but again, I don't think, I think to get to that level, you got to play that six-player count, that five. I think at the three and even the four, I think it might be just a little more, you know, less rowdy. And more just predictive.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right. Enjoyed well, it. That's our Gen Cant Day One. Oh, I guess we should say our favorite. I think After the Virus is my favorite game, but that was a weird play. So I think Marvel Villainous was probably my favorite game of the day.
Yeah, I would say Marvel Villainous was my favorite, and I would say my surprise game of the day was After the Virus, just because I really. You know, we've been looking at
the
clearance rack for so long.
At so many of these games.
You know, I was definitely pleased with Stampede.
Yeah.
But yeah, After the Virus just surprised me. It was more than I expected.
Right.
So, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it looked like it was going to be a thematic game. It's really a mechanical game.
Right.
So, which, yeah, for better or for worse.
Technically an engine builder / deck builder.
Yeah, I mean, some weird stuff there.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
It's in that vein of like Race for the Galaxy and stuff like that, but
it's
as a
sort of deck deconstructor at the same time because the zombies are coming in your deck, you're getting them out of your deck, they're coming back in your deck. What I like about it, and I don't know that you mentioned this when you went over the game the other day, what's interesting, it's not just play this game, it's X amount of scenarios. I shouldn't even call them scenarios.
Setup
/ win conditions, which I think. That's where it gets that Friday type feel for me, where I can play this solo a few different ways and see what happens. So, yeah, that was good. But yeah, Marvel.
Cool. All right, everybody. There's day one of our Gen Cant. Stay home. Stay safe. We'll keep talking to you about games. Bye.